Welcome to the Do Your Good podcast series. In this podcast series, you'll hear from me, Sybil, and other experts in the field to help you make your money matter and make a huge difference in the world. I come to you with over two decades of experience as a person who's helped donors give away over $45 million in donations, both large and small. This podcast series is meant to give you the tools you need to be effective in the world and fund nonprofits and issues that you care about with meaning and purpose, and to make a true, deep difference in the world. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the first interview of season four. And I'm laughing because in season four, it's primarily reruns, but this episode is not. I was really, really psyched because I got an interview with Rachel from Justice Funders right after I set up season four. And I didn't know I'd be able to squeeze her in here, but this is a brand new interview. And I wanted to play it because we're really discussing how do you, if you're a funder that cares about a just transition to a regenerative economy, how do you fund well in that space? And there's a lot of folks that have talked about this over the years. The most recent effort has been around trust-based philanthropy. But Justice Funders and Rachel and the team, they get way more in depth. I mean, trust-based philanthropy is important, don't get me wrong, but they get more in depth in terms of how do you navigate this space? And I've been doing a lot of thinking about it as well. So I'll also have a special episode just to talk to you about my thoughts here. But I thought you'd get a lot out of this. So I look forward to you listening to this conversation that I'm about to have with Rachel. Thanks a lot, everybody. Have a great day. Rachel, yay. I'm so glad you're on my podcast. This is friggin' awesome. Rachel, I interviewed you for one of my clients' projects where we were really thinking through effective funding strategies, and I was blown away by you. I mean, I just think you think so thoughtfully and carefully about how to fund in a way that's respectful of a just transition in our community. And you represent the Justice Funders Network. So in this interview, I'm hoping we can really talk a lot about those issues and how can a donor think carefully about how to fund with resonance in mind. And I said resonance because the Justice Funders just created a really cool report all about this topic that I gobbled up. So before we get into all the nitty-gritty of the important best practices for donors to think through here, Rachel, can you tell my listeners about who you are and what made you so interested in what you're doing today?
Yeah, sure. Well, and first of all, just thanks so much for having me. And your intro had me a little blushing a little bit. So really appreciate the chance to be with you. So yeah, I have been working in the field of philanthropy for many decades at this point. And I came into the work as a very sort of idealistic and passionate college grad that just really wanted to make a difference in the world. And, you know, the sort of what I knew about philanthropy at the time in terms of just that love of humanity was really inspiring to me of like, oh, wow, like people have excess resources and want to contribute to making the world a better place. How awesome is that? And so over the course of my career, definitely like layered a little more nuance and understanding of what philanthropy is and does and sort of the good, bad, the ugly. And, you know, during my time, I was at Global Fund for Women for many years and got to be part of an organization that was really trying to model a different way of doing philanthropy that was based in feminist principles and really accountable to movements. And I found that powerful and inspiring, but also just sort of peeling back the layers and understanding kind of where philanthropy, like what actually created philanthropy and being able to exist. And then also the practices that even if they were really well-intended in terms of like mitigating risk or what have you, were sort of like really tying the hands of organization and movement. So I've become passionate about this work of like, how do we come from a place of like clear-eyed understanding of the mistakes and weaknesses and inherent injustices that created philanthropy, but like hold on to that spirit of the love of humanity and, you know, really transform the field for that. So
I love that. So can we talk a little bit about your work with Justice Funders? And I know you're also a consultant and really help people think through these things. So let's first talk about Justice Funders and what the goal is there to help us in terms of thinking through how to fund in this way.
Yeah, absolutely. So I joined Justice Funders back in 2015 when it was still called the Bay Area Justice Funders Network. It was a tiny little organization. I was the second staff person. And at that point, it was kind of a standard local affinity group of mostly progressive funders that are interested in justice, kind of coming together and learning from each other. But really the question that our founding ED was asking at that time was like, how do we actually get to practice change? And it felt like they're always coming together in these philanthropic spaces and, you know, presenting white papers and, you know, networking and what have you. But then afterwards, people would come up to her and say like, okay, well, like, let me tell you what's going on in my foundation. Can we go have coffee? And realizing like, those were the conversations we most needed to be having to like get real with each other and talk about what is going to result in change in the sector. And this sort of like, oh, but we do it right, but we got to get beyond the choir idea that I've seen in so many philanthropic spaces over the years, sort of like, well, wait, is there really a choir?
Yeah, that's exactly why I want to talk to you, Rachel, because like I've been involved in so many trainings and read so many white papers. Yeah, those were all helpful. But those coffee shop conversations, that's the key, right? To like really think through, how do you navigate this within the foundations you work with and with the families that you work with in the best way, you know, instead of just sort of saying one size fits all, which I just don't believe in that. There's no one size fits all. Anyway, I can't help it but interject. So keep going, Rachel, keep going. And now for an ad, but don't go away because there's lots more to talk about. Hello, everyone. I want to let you know that I am putting forward a pretty exciting new podcast season, which is going to focus on the journey I took with one of my clients to think through effective funding strategies to reduce firearm-related suicide in rural and remote communities, specifically looking at Oregon as an example. So tune in to my podcast series September 30th through October 21st. Every Monday, I'll have a new special episode specifically discussing this issue. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, well, that's just it. And so when I came in 2015, the invitation was to design and launch a leadership development program for social justice grant makers with those questions in mind of like, do we have a choir? How do we create the choir? What's the songbook? And also just getting really real with each other and supporting each other in practice change and learning some new skills and analyses and all that to get beyond just kind of the really lovely and important, you know, best practices, but doing it at scale takes a lot more than that.
Yeah. And with the resonance framework, when I read it, that was one of the things that was really interesting to me is that it was written in a way that didn't feel sort of one size fits all. Mm-hmm. I did want to pull out some things that I had questions about. But before we do that, can you talk to me a little bit about what are some of the high level takeaways that you think we should all be thinking about related to that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's very interesting having created a variety of frameworks and then seeing how people use them. Right. So first we created the choir book, which you can tell from all my metaphors, we were pretty into that. And that the choir book was very much like what people are more familiar with trust-based philanthropy. It's like, okay, what could you do at this step of the grant cycle or this step of the grant cycle? And we tried to really have it inquiry-based.
Rachel, just to interject quickly, I did interview John Esterly, who is one of the co-founders, as you know, of trust-based philanthropy. So if folks are interested in learning more about that, they can listen to that interview as well. So just want to interject there on that. Okay, keep going, Rachel. Keep going.
Yeah, and we were working with John in those early days as well. And you know, trust-based philanthropy was kind of coming about around the same time that we were launching the Harmony Initiative, the leadership program, and the choir book. And what we were really trying to get to is that balance between like a visionary and radical sense of like, what would it look like to be values aligned, but then also get really practical and like, what do you do back at your desk like next week? Right. And so that one was focused on grant making. And then Resonance Framework, the first version, was really dreamt up in a sense of like, what's actually the stronger, bolder vision that's more complete? That's because philanthropy does a lot more than just grant making. And so we were looking at all the different levers that any leader has to pull to move towards justice. In that resonance framework. So that was also looking at leadership practices, endowment, you know, grant making decision and process and strategy, and relationship to communities. And it was a more, I'd say it was a more radical vision as opposed to how can philanthropy be like less harmful and more like, what does the world really need? And how can philanthropy be a part of that? But not coming from a place of like, here's your checklist or pathway, but rather here's some really good questions to be asking.
Yeah. But can you bring up some of those questions? And then I want to pull out some. I want to be a devil's advocate, actually.
Oh, all right. Yeah. So we've identified a series of questions that sort of align with the Just Transition framework. So this is in our latest version of Resonance. So Resonance 2.0, which was just released this year, we took the solid foundation of what we had created 5 years ago and just made it a little bit stronger and clearer and bolder based on all these years of using it with our participants and our clients. So one of the main changes that we made is to more explicitly align the framework with the Just Transitions framework, which I can say more about. But to answer your question, we identified some key strategic questions for any grant maker or philanthropic professional to be asking as they consider their work. And so when it comes to, say, the purpose of the organization, the question would be, how is our foundation moving towards redistributing wealth, rematriating land, and or giving reparations, right? If it's about the work, how are we investigating and taking action to heal from the legacy of our foundation's extraction of wealth by returning power and agency to people? So there's five of these questions, and they're really in the sense of how do we like start to just ask what the practices would be without assuming that you're coming from a very particular starting point. And just so folks know, this is in the Resonance framework itself. You can see all the questions and it's available for download off of the justicefunders.org website.
Yeah. And in the show notes, we'll have a link to it. And I found it really helpful because it allowed me to really think through some of the key pieces, and it was written for funders, for philanthropists. So it like interpreted Just Transition and helped us think about it specifically with the special world we're in philanthropy.
And now for an ad, but don't go away because there's lots more to talk about. Hello, everyone. I'm so glad that you're enjoying my podcast. In my podcast, I hope to talk to you, the wonderful donors and philanthropists that I work with, to help you think through the most effective way to make your money matter. I also, in my podcast series and through all my trainings, want to help and support the nonprofits that are out there trying to raise money and hone their pitch. Because I'm somebody that works with donors, I get pitched all the time by amazing nonprofit leaders, so I know what it takes to raise money effectively. Please check out everything I have to offer at www.doyourgood.com. I have a whole host of course materials and lessons, videos, downloadable documents, a blog that I keep updated. All of it is 100% free for you to see and review and learn from. Please check it out. Again, www.doyourgood.com. Thanks a lot.
Rachel, I want to bring up a couple of things thoughts that it sparked for me. And I really appreciate you saying it was, how I interpret you saying this, it's really a pretty significant piece of work because you're trying to really connect it with the Just Transition framework. And a lot of light bulbs went off for me because in a good way, because I was thinking about it also in the context of trust-based philanthropy. When you so directly connect the work with Just Transition, the approach to Just Transition in a lot of ways is skeptical, in my opinion, and this is just me in terms of looking at the definition and everything. It feels it's very skeptical of capitalism, of our current system, okay? Mm-hmm. And the thing that I'm curious about is there are a lot of philanthropists who have made their wealth, as you know, through the capitalistic model, and also people who want to give back but still believe that the capitalistic model can be changed to support important societal changes that need to happen, right? So a lot of folks believe you can work within the system to make the system better. Mm-hmm. When I read about the Just Transition and really read the definitions and really dig in, it feels like fundamentally Just Transition could conflict with a funder who may want to fund a campaign that will change a policy, like to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, within the current context, within the current system. How do we reconcile those two funding approaches? Because I actually don't think they need to conflict. I think there's room for both. But I've also seen situations in my philanthropic career where they have conflicted, where people have not seen eye to eye and then really gone off and been more siloed than united. So I would just love to know some more thoughts from you about this. I'm sure you thought so much about it. And then we should talk about the definition of just transition as well to make sure people are grounded in that. But let's talk high level first.
Yeah. Oh, so much to say about this. The Just Transition Framework, first, I'll just note that it, you know, it's something that we, as of, I think, fall of 2015, Justice Funder started to orient all of our work towards this just transition. And that was part of our being in the practice of being movement accountable, of like, this is a framework coming from cross-sectoral movements around their larger strategy, and to be able to support and align and lift that up, as opposed to coming up with our own, felt in alignment with our values and what we want philanthropy to do. And if you look at the Just Transition Framework, it really is a strategy document. It is this very clear, like, okay, this is what we're in terms of the extractive economy, with a whole set of worldviews and values and a way of understanding work and governance. And then, like, what do we actually want? What is the world that will work for all of us? And what are the values that would underlie that? And what would be the practices of governance? And what would work look like in that world that truly served all of us? And then the sense of, like, okay, how do we get from A to B? And so it's stopping the bad and building the new. So to your question, like, we absolutely need the, you know, the short-term wins and fight that bad policy and, you know, really address the current crises, while also envisioning what's the world that we want to create. What do we want to replace it with? Because if we're only fighting, then that's all we know how to do. And then, you know, if you win that fight by stopping something, but, like, do you have anything in place for what the next thing is? So we actually need all of that work to be happening across the spectrum. And if you think about, you know, lessons from nature in terms of how ecosystems work, it's like every entity within that ecosystem plays a role. And there's also, like, overlap and different entities playing some of the same roles, so that, like, collectively it's stronger. And I think it's the same lens on philanthropy as well, of, like, we need the full range of strategies that collectively move us from the extractive economy that's causing so much harm and pain and crises to a regenerative and living economy that actually creates the world where we can live in harmony with the earth and each other.
I love that. I really do. And I'm going to read the definition. And I really want to hone in on one of the pieces of language here that you have, not you, but the just transition definition. There's so much of it, but here is a quote I want to pull out. A vision-led, unifying, and place-based set of principles, processes, and practices that build economic and political power to shift from an extractive economy to a regenerative economy. To me, that can be that, just that sentence there. While on the one hand, if you read the entire resonance framework that you put together and think about just transition, you can think a bit about it as a very radical shift. But I also want to think about, I love how you said it, because it unifies, you know, we have to change policies and practices to get us there. The regenerative economy, to me, I'm really honing in on that. What can that mean for everybody, including folks that are progressive businesses, who are working within our system to make it even better? That's the one thing, is I feel like trying to think about how can we build there. So I'd love your thoughts even more on that.
Yeah, absolutely. So this vision of a regenerative economy, some people call it the living economy, lots of different language across the movements around how to describe this. But really, it's like looking at an overarching worldview of sort of caring and sacredness to start, as opposed to, in our current extractive economy, so much a focus of consumerism and a more colonial mindset. So grounded in that caring and sacredness, then really looking at what resources we use and how we use them to be in a regenerative way, to, like, not be in this excessive growth and extraction that we're in our current economy, which we know what it's doing to people and planet. And that the work, as opposed to really being then that exploitation, becomes more about the cooperation and collaboration together towards a purpose of ecological and social well-being. So that's sort of the core of the just transition framework in terms of what the regenerative economy would be, right? And it's also an exercise in actually envisioning what that could be, like from the place that we're at now, to be like, what another world is possible. Let's imagine it, because we actually can't pursue it until we can imagine it. So that's part of the action of the just transition, is just the imagination.
I love that. Love that. Okay. So you're spending all this time and energy in this area of work, and I'm guessing that you may have experienced some situations where donors have sort of messed this up, haven't done it well. We can keep it anonymous, but I'd love to have, we keep it anonymous. This is not an I gotcha kind of interview, but I'd love to hear about some of the experiences you had in terms of that motivated you to make a shift, or to support folks in making a shift. And then also maybe some best experiences, like when you really seen it go well.
Well, I'll just say, like, nobody is doing this fully or well, right? Like the regenerative economy does not exist yet, although, to use sort of from emergent strategy and Adrienne Marie Brown, this sense of the fractals, I think what we're trying to do right now is to create those small examples and experiments of the living economy now to prove that it could exist, you know, from small scale to large scale. So I'll say, like, on the positive side, people are investing in that. And that is very, very exciting. So many new community-based and controlled funds that are trying to create that. In terms of the work with philanthropy, in being part of that, the shift from the extractive economy, which resulted in all of the resources that philanthropy holds come from that extractive economy, right? So to be able to negotiate that, like, challenge and contradiction of who we think we are and what we think we're doing versus where it came from, and then actually be strategic to use those resources from the extractive economy into resources that create the regenerative economy, right? So that is not easy or clear on how to do that. And so
I love that. So essentially all of us are doing it wrong, everybody, but we're trying, in little baby steps, right?
Well, you know, I would just say, like, it is a big ask to move the whole system. And the only way we're going to do it is by trying and by failing, right? Being able to make the mistakes and to learn the lessons, like, and to put things in practice. So if you look at the seven resonance spectra back in 2018 or so.
Hey, Rachel, seven resonance spectra. Sorry, I wasn't tracking that part. Let me make sure that my listeners know that piece. What is What's the seven resonance spectra?
So in both the original version and in the updated version of the resonance framework, we lifted out these seven different areas that philanthropy works in, right? So there's the leadership, operations, endowment, grant-making strategy, grant-making process, grant-making decision, and relationship to communities. So we tried to...
Excellent. Just wanted to make sure I pulled that out for folks. They got that. Yeah. Okay, great.
Yeah. And so what we did, not as like a checklist or a pathway, we tried to list out, like, what would the practices look like from, like, current status quo sort of extractive practices within philanthropy, and then moving towards less extractive restorative and regenerative practices. And when we went to write the first version, and then also when we did our update, it's not like there's a handful of foundations that are like, oh yeah, they're restorative on all seven spectra. Like, that doesn't exist. Like, it's a longer term trajectory. But our hope is that in our leadership programs, in our consulting work, in our public education programs, we're helping inspire the radical imagination that it is possible, as well as some really practical things that you can be like, okay, what can we do in our foundation around how we do strategy? How could that shift, right? And obviously, like, there's so many different approaches across the field, like, so much happening around participatory grant making over the last 5-10 years. And how does that share and transfer decision-making power? How do the processes get streamlined to be much easier and more streamlined and longer-term vision than our sort of standard practices within philanthropy? And just knowing that even those small moves make a big difference as we try to kind of hold our collective feet to the fire to move on all seven of these spectra towards more restorative practice.
Great. And can you give me an example then of a foundation that's sort of done a piece of it really well that you really respect and like?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'll say like one of the darlings of the progressive left philanthropy space these days is definitely Kataly Foundation and their grant making and the way they've been very thoughtful in values alignment in all aspects of their work, both in terms of like originally setting it to be a spend down foundation and it has a certain time horizon and in the current processes, how they're using participatory grant making. There's so many things about Kataly, and they've written some beautiful blog pieces and been in lots of different places to share their story and sort of learning in public, as they've said, which is really beautiful. So yeah, I would definitely encourage folks to explore more about what Kataly is doing and learning along the way.
That's great. Thank you for that. We'll have a link to Kataly Foundation in the show notes as well. So lots of homework for folks in this interview. It's great. before we go, can you give my listeners your high level takeaways for us? What should we be thinking about in all this work that you're doing?
I mean, I think for me at the heart of this, this is a practice of both love and hope. It can be pretty hard to stay hopeful with the times that we're living in and to not get jaded. So I think this is meant to be like a practical action guide to help you stay in a place of love and hope that we can get to better places. We can have more impact in ways that really matter to communities. And here's a way to kind of be in a thoughtful inquiry-based process to explore that.
That's great. I really like that. Thank you so much for your time, Rachel. I appreciate you. And I hope you have a great rest of your day.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to be with you.
So there you have it. I hope you enjoyed this podcast as much as I enjoyed making it for you. So if you want to find out more about what I have to offer, please check out www.doyourgood.com and learn more ways to make your money matter. Until next time, do your good and be well.